C1C. Number 2A.
So we go to the next point of spirit classifies all ideas. Well, Mrs. Eddy says so. Have you ever classified ideas? See? Did we ever think of classifying ideas, or did we just always talk about isolated ideas? Well, a science needs that instead of contemplating millions of different ideas that one cannot grasp and contemplate. Every science says, I reduce the infinite to some classifications, to some categories, and then I can understand it, and I can handle it. And this is therefore a wonderful, gentle, warm, loving sense of science, that science has found out a beautiful method of taking the burden away from us, always to have to deal with infinite ideas, with numberless ideas, and be so kind to say to us, look here, all what you need is only a few categories, and you can understand the infinite through those few categories. So, Mrs. Eddy too used that instrument of science and formed categories. You see what she did? She did not state numberless atomistic truths and facts, but she categorized, say, all the ideas of mind under one term, mind. All the ideas of spirit under the term, spirit. All the ideas of soul under the term soul. So that finally when we understand just the seven synonymous term, we understand the whole infinite nature of God. That's what a science does. Just as in any other science, they reduce all the phenomena into just a few categories and classify them, and then they can master the whole system. So Mrs. Eddy did that, and in order to bring out those great categories, she capitalized those terms that constitute the categories of being and the classifications of being. And so she established a whole system of teaching on the basis of the capitalized terms. Actually, we must see that she had, because of the use of English language, also to capitalize some of the religious term, like father and mother and things like that. But her new terminology can now be seen that she has three great categories: the nature of God, through the capitalized term mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love. A second category, the operational sense of God, through the capitalized term Word, Christ, Christianity, science. And the third big category, the different dimensions or levels of science, by capitalizing science and using it as science itself, divine science, absolute Christian science, and Christian science. So with a very few terms, she gave us the language of spirit. If we understand those capitalized terms, we speak the language of spirit, and we hear the language of spirit. That new language which is now constituting or speaking the new system of reference. But when we classify a subject, we also have to see that we find the interrelationship of the categories. And through the interrelationship of categories, we really get one web of consistency without seam and rent, where there is no loophole in it. And when we find the relationship of categories, we really get the system of Christian Science. Therefore, we can see that relationships constitute now the system. They form the system. They form the structure now. Everything is now related to each other and operate constantly in that interrelationship, which Mrs. Eddy calls the divine infinite calculus. She says that thought accepts the divine infinite calculus. Christian Scientists in general have never been interested in thinking, what is that divine infinite calculus? They just felt this is a funny term, and somehow I guess this is a term taken from mathematics, and it's one of her poetical symbols, not seeing that really she indicated there at the end of the seventh day of creation that terrific point, the calculus of spirit, about which she always speaks, to show that it is an infinite calculus, that those great capitalized terms can be combined and related in an infinite way, and every time they are related differently, they bring out what spirit individualizes. And we get here the third means, namely that spirit not only diversifies and classifies, but also individualizes all ideas. And so we get that individualization, which we only can have on the basis of the system of science. Therefore, we have only a right really to speak about an individual inspiration if it comes out of the system and not out of the human mind. Can you see that? Inspiration is a word that is misused more than it is used properly. Everything that people, somehow the students, just took from the subconscious up to the conscious, they called inspiration. But inspiration as the individualization of the divine principle is actually only that which is the outcome of the divine infinite calculus. Only then, when our consciousness is really cultured in the system of Christian Science, only then the individualized expression of that system has the right to call inspiration. Only that. And so let's be clear that we are not going to misuse that wonderful term, inspiration. The student, especially the religious student, the emotional student, he likes to tell about the inspiration he had in the morning, an inspiration he had when reading this and that verse in the day. This is a great misuse. Inspiration, as used in Christian Science, therefore, is the individualization of spirit on the basis of our cultured consciousness of a structured consciousness. There, the true inspiration comes to birth. There, the genius, the spiritual genius, is born and comes to birth. There we find that newness of life, the ever newness of inspiration. So that we can see that the fundamental system of Christian Science that is defined through those three great categories of capitalized terms always appears through the infinite calculus as a different structure of that system. That it always shows itself in a different way, and therefore It is not something that repeats itself. And this is what we are going to see in the textbook. The whole textbook is built on that system of the three capitalized terms. But every chapter in that textbook, though it is built on the same system of the seven synonymous term, will present a subject of reality in a different, in an individualized way. Here you can see how, therefore, when we investigate each chapter of the textbook, we will always see the same system, but always in an individualized way. Therefore, every chapter will give a different aspect of the system, never deviating from the system, and yet be always something different, individualized. And only when we see that, naturally, then the whole textbook as a whole, together, makes one great pattern, where we can see that the textbook leads, so to say, from the first sentence of the first chapter, right through the whole system, to the last statement of the last chapter. There is one thread going through it, never breaking. That is what a true interpretation of the text based on a consciousness that is cultured in the system can read in the text. Where another consciousness that is not trained and not cultured in the system can read something quite different, but never that what God dictated to Mrs. Eddy. Never. That is the reason why actually the structure of the textbook could only be seen after the student has trained himself in the categories of being. Before, we didn't have a long culture of the seven synonymous term and the four sides over about 12 years, culturing it, spiritually culturing it. We couldn't see it. And this is wonderful, because it shows that it is consciousness that reads the textbook. So that brings us now to something else, to another subject. And then afterwards, tomorrow, there is another subject, then we have the fundamentals. Then we can start using them. We have been seeing that spirit imparts the understanding. Not we, not the text, not the human mind. Spirit imparts the understanding. And we have seen that this spirit imparts it through diversification, classification, individualization. And we have seen that in that train of thought, that we have seen that the atomistic approach is wrong, that it needs the structural approach, the holistic approach. And we have seen that the holistic approach is an approach in which all the various facts are related to each other to form a consistent whole, holism. And so I want to talk a little bit about structure and structuralism. Structure, as we have seen, is the individual presentation of a fundamental system, and system is always the relationship of categories. So the fundamental point of structure is relationship. Structure is not built on isolated facts or things. It is relational. Naturally, those relations must be ordered, must be lawful, must be scientific. Therefore, today, in every science, no matter which science we touch today, the science defines their subject always structurally and no more atomistically. When we went to school, most of us who are sitting here, we got an instruction in atomistic truth. And only when one had a very good education higher up at the universities, not even then always, depended on the subject, one was introduced a bit into a relationship. But structure is a very modern term in science. It came up round about the 1960s, but today no science can stand anymore its test without a structural approach. Therefore, a structural concept of science defines reality. How? This is interesting. It defines reality like this, that it says reality, whatever their subject is, does not consist of the accumulation of things or facts or data or truth. So, reality in the spiritual does not consist of the accumulation of spiritual facts. I've seen that that is not anymore considered science. Therefore, if reality does not consist of facts, what then is that which constitutes reality? And the answer is relationship. Today one can see that reality is made up of relationships rather than of things or facts. And this is true in every science. It is just to see today that evolution goes on and that the concept of science which the world had last century is not the concept of science which the world has today. The question is only, do we want to progress or just stay back with the fleshpots of Egypt and say that's good enough for us? Or do we have the flexibility to progress, to evolve in consciousness and see deeper, look deeper into reality? So just keep that in mind, that actually reality consists of relationships, not of facts or data. Therefore, that reality inheres in the relationship which we discern between facts. You see that difference? Isn't it a terrific difference? That reality does not consist and inheres in the facts, but actually in the relationship between the facts. And you can very quickly see now that if we read a text, that if we read in the text the facts, that we do not understand the textbook. That in order to understand the textbook, we must see the relationship between the facts that are stated there. Therefore, one has begun to see that there are no independent elements. There are no independent elements. We were perhaps thinking, yes, the universe consists of a lot of independent elements. And if we accumulate those independent elements and make a big heap, we have more. We have more of reality. And this is not true. And I just must explain, perhaps through one symbolism, to you what that means so that you can see. Perhaps at the first moment you are shocked that you say, that I say, well, reality does not really consist of independent elements. And just as Jesus tried to explain spiritual truth through stories and through parables and things like that, let me take a symbol. If you look out into the sky, up in the sky far above, you may perhaps see a bird flying up there. Is that bird not an independent element? We think yes, it is. We think it's there, up there, quite independent, no string attached to it. Is that bird actually an independent element? Is he not dependent? Is that bird up there not dependent on the President of the United States? Is he actually independent? Now let's look at that bird. Why does that bird have wings? Because it must keep away from the gravitational force of the Earth. So that bird is dependent on the gravitational force of the Earth, isn't it? So it cannot exist as a bird without gravitational force. How are those wings built? They are built so that it can keep that bird in the air. It doesn't fall down. So apparently it's dependent on the air in between the bird and the Earth. You have another relationship. Is that not so? So that bird is related to the Earth, is related to the air. That bird is built the way he's built because, say, perhaps he eats a special kind of insects or anything like that. Let's say insects. So he's dependent on the insects. The moment you take away the insects, he has to find new food, a new kind of food. And he has to adapt himself, and perhaps his bill will be built differently after a few hundred years. He changes. Therefore, he's not independent. He's dependent on the insects. The insects are there or not there, perhaps because the President of the United States, together with the Congress, puts a law through that says, let's use this and that insecticide that kills those insects. So the determination of the Congress or of the President, whatever is the law, is defining if those insects are there or not there, and is defining if that bird eats those insects or must find another insect and therefore have another bill and must have another organism, and this organism must change. And so you can go on and on and on and on until you finally find that that bird is actually nothing by itself. He's only a summary of relationships. Is that clear? And the moment these relationships are changed, the bird has to change. Either he has to emigrate or he has to transform his whole organism and therefore must have a different organism and different habitats and so on. He changes. Do you see how a bird is nothing else but the coming together of a lot of relationships? That is a point of intersection of relationships. That's exactly what Mrs. Eddy says. She says an idea, when it appears in the focal distance of spirit, then it has full effulgence. What is the focal point of spirit? There where all the relationships meet. focal point, you know, from optics is when all the rays of light meet at one point, and therefore at that point, the true idea, the true image is established. And the moment you go out of that focal point, you have an inverted image, as Mrs. Eddy says, and therefore the phenomena changes. So we can easily see that reality consists of relationships and not of things and facts and isolated, independent elements. Therefore, can you see if you have, say, as another symbolism, a web of a spider, you say a spider's web or something like that, which symbolizes a whole network. The moment we move one point of the network, we move the whole system. Every one point of intersection is somehow in the first, second, third degree affected by that one, which apparently the Chinese have a wonderful saying which says, if you cut the blade of grass, you shake the whole earth. Just indicating there doesn't exist an isolated fact. Everything is holistic. Everything is holistic. Can you somehow sense Mrs. Eddy's discovery of holism, where she says that every idea reflects the whole, reflects life, truth, and love. Every idea. And every idea is nothing but the reflection, and the reflection is nothing else but relationships. And in this way you begin to realize that really we are contemplating the textbook differently by seeing that every word, every sentence, every paragraph, considered alone, does not yield its meaning. That only when it's considered within the whole, therefore holistic, the meaning of that word, of that sentence, of that paragraph comes out. Therefore we have to read the textbook structurally, relational. Meaning is always relational.